I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Do you remember the first time you quit your job? How about the time you moved away from home or moved on from a relationship? My guest sociologist, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, says all of these are exits. They're exits that we should pay attention to and learn from. Her new book is titled Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, welcome back.
I'm delighted to be here, Callie.
Now, you point out in your book, even though it's titled Exits, that we are so often focused on beginnings. And I wonder, isn't that because beginnings offer possibility and exits seem like that's it, that's the end?
Right. I mean, our cultural, part of the reason I wanted to write this book is because I think that we give very little attention to exits. We almost act as if they are moments of retreat or failure. I think of them. Often our culture sees them as the negative spaces in our life journeys, whereas beginnings we are focused on, embarkings, launchings, always what is the next opportunity? Can we seize it? Our teachers ask us, our parents ask us, so what's up next? Where are you going next? And I think with this preoccupation with beginnings, we miss, I think, half the life story because we don't shine a light on what's, I think, productive and generative and interesting and reflective about our goodbyes, our departures.
So if freedom is a part of the title of your book and your focus, I think it's easy to see that a beginning feels freer because it has a fresh slate. How is an Yes. ending as freeing as a beginning, or maybe more so?
Well, actually, most exits and even many beginnings have this paradoxical sensation of feeling like loss, you're leaving something behind, and liberation, I'm free of it, I'm out of here. As a matter of fact, many people who speak about divorces or endings of relationships speak about it that way. Certainly people who are in school and graduating speak about the loss of friendships, the loss of the intense kind of intellectual academic environment, but the liberation of moving on. So I think for most exits, there is this kind of double-edged feeling of, you know, pain and beauty, loss and liberation, anguish and eagerness. It's a really difficult and heady and exciting mix.
If you think of an exit and its most finite kind of stature, you think, well, that's it. That the door is closed. There's no more. And you might come to, what might come to mind might be death. But in your book, you're not speaking about exits, that exit only.
I mean,
In fact, it's rather a small space in your book.
Exactly. Exactly. It ends, of course, as it must, with death in a chapter called Grace. But I'm talking about a huge variety of exits, even those exits that we rarely think of as exits. So I'm talking about a gay activist middle-aged man who tells the story of his exit from the closet. I'm talking about a young Iranian boy at 16 who's forced to leave his war-torn country and come to this one, exiting from this place of home and solace and asylum in his family, even though it was so dangerous to come to this place which feels strange and foreign and unwelcoming. I'm talking about an anthropologist, right, who understands it's not just important to gain access in the way that we social scientists talk about it, moving into the field to collect your data, but to exit with grace and with responsibility and with a sense of ethical kind of concern about leaving folks behind and telling other people's story. I'm talking about the exits that go on in psychotherapy. The psychotherapist, as a matter of fact, works with patients on helping them exit the struggles and pains, neuroses and anxieties and addictions of their past. How can you move beyond those, exit those? At the same time as she is helping with her patients figure out a way to terminate, that's the language that psychologists and psychiatrists use, to terminate their relationship so the patient can move on. I'm talking about the intensive care unit attending physician who teaches his residents how to prepare their patients for the two exits from the ICU, the one back to the floor of the hospital and the one that will move towards death. So there's a huge range. The priest who has a very, very hard time leaving the church that he loves so much and cares about so deeply, but he's always felt the pain of a life of celibacy, and he knows he must move on. So it's a range of exits of different kinds of sizes and proportions, and all about trying to bring light and revelation to these, I think, most extraordinary moments in our life journeys.
If any of those exits, as described by my guest, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, resonate with you, give us a call. Join in the conversation, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. What was a memorable exit in your life, and did it surprise you? And would you do it differently? We're at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. As always, you can tweet us at Boss Public Radio or send us a Facebook message at our facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. And again, I'm speaking with Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, and her latest book is Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. So one of the things that you start with the book, and I think it's so marvelous, is reminding all of us, because, again, we're stuck in that beginnings thing, about how the language and the metaphor of exit is all around us. Right. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, it's on the physical landscape, right? We're in a movie theater, we're in a parking garage, and we see the bright, flashing exit, red exit signs. We see them along the highway, right? In the green sign with the white lettering that flashes, telling us where we're the distance to the next exit. But also, exits are very much a part of our historical landscape. I mean, our country is really about people exiting the countries from which they came. So the exit story is really embedded in our historical narrative. And then there are the exits that are sort of written into our developmental trajectories. I talk about the wonderful work of Eric Erickson, who 50 years ago talked about the various stages of life, 8 stages of life, as we move through our life journeys. And at each one of these moments of shift, he talks about there being a tension between progression and regression, between moving forward and staying put. And so at the very center, as this conflict is worked out, what's really important if we're going to evolve, if we're going to grow, is that we make the exit from where we were to where we hope to go. So it's written into our developmental scripts as well, into our intergenerational patterns in families, as kids grow up, become adolescent, and leave for college. And one of the things that's interrupted that kind of cultural flow that we all experience is the economy now, right? Where many kids are leaving for college, their families anticipated that after college they'd go on and move on to another place, maybe another state, but certainly start their own living space and home. And now they're coming back, right, to live under their parents' roof, producing a condition that psychologists call pejoratively the failure to launch, the failure to exit, right? So there are exit stories all around us, and they bear noticing, right? I mean, I can't, after writing this book, of course, I can't go anywhere without seeing an exit sign, either physically on the landscape or hearing an exit story.
I wish you would read, because I thought it was beautiful, on page 11, the paragraph that begins with exits and ends with contrast, just to set us up here.
Exits, therefore, are ubiquitous, marking the physical landscape we inhabit, embedded in our language and metaphors, embroidered into the historical narrative of our country, braided into the sequence and arc of our individual development, shaped by the contemporary scene of our economic crisis and global mobility, and laced into the intergenerational tensions and discourses in our families and communities. Perhaps it is the very ordinariness, familiarity, and ubiquity of our experiences of exit that make them invisible to us. And perhaps it is our overvaluing of the launch, the promise of entry, and the hopefulness of beginning that render our exits ignoble by contrast.
I just thought that just, you know, that rendering invisible was so important. And as you say now, you can see it all because you've been steeped in this for so long. My guest is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. Her latest book is Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970 is our number if you want to share exits that were meaningful in your life. And you can write to our Facebook page or send us a tweet at Boss Public Radio. Robert from Boston, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Hi, actually. This is great. Quite a conversation. This is my first time calling into NPR.
Well, there you go.
Right. So I know that I'm going to pick up this book because it sounds really fantastic. I had a great exit that you only mentioned briefly with respect to death. My father passed away in the last month from cancer. And I find myself, again, having that kind of exit, but also, as you mentioned, kind of this kind of transparency and kind of this closure that you have with relationships. And you move on to different things. And I find myself in Boston again for this is my first year here in the city, and I'm starting my career and working my way to graduate school. And I just, this whole kind of closure narrative and endings really works into it. And I just wanted to say I really appreciate the conversation that you're having.
Thank you so much, Robert, for your call.
I think both the leaving and the entering that you're talking about in terms of coming to this city and beginning, having left what was before, but also what is the sort of iconic exit, isn't it? When someone, a loved one, dies and you're saying the final goodbye. One of the things that words that I rarely use is closure. Because I really think that even as we make exits, we carry so much with us. That is that if we're moving from one identity to another, one job place to another, one environment to another, that we are carrying with us our character, our temperament, our experiences, our skill set with us. And sometimes those help us as we move towards this new beginning. And I think that's also true even in death. Because even though your father died and he's gone physically, his spirit carries on in your life, I am sure. You continue to have conversations with him. I'm sure he flashes through your mind as you move through your daily life. And so what's so exciting, it seems to me, about exits is that it doesn't have to be closure. It can also represent a kind of fundamental and profound continuity.
I would just like to add the importance of memory and that kind of veneration, because closure is just a word that is often used, and perhaps I maybe kind of just like to apply it because that's what you classically hear, but I think that memory is very important, as you say, in this kind of transition process as you move on from one ending to a new beginning.
I think that's well put.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much.
The thing about exits, as you have portrayed it in your book, is that it inspires movement. So it's really not a, when you think of a physical end, it's not a physical end. And as you just described, there's a lot going on there. I was taken with the part of your book when you referenced No Exit, the play by Sartre, in which when the hell was being fixed in the same place.
Right.
So in order to really get out of hell, you had to be moving, but you had to exit from that space in order to do it.
Exactly. There's that's in a chapter called Freedom, I mean, which really sort of in some ways anchors this whole book, because what's so scary and horrible about Sartre's three characters in Exit is that they are in hell, and they rightfully are in hell. They've done terrible, terrible things. And they feed on each other, and they do self-destructive things as they begin to take on this role of horrible, horrible person, right? But then when they have the opportunity to leave, the door flings open. They could leave. They don't, right? They don't see the exit sign, and so they don't go towards freedom. And so part of what this book is saying is that we need to be able to see and recognize the exit signs when they are there, right? That will allow us to be free, that will liberate us from whatever was before. Now, it doesn't mean that what was before was bad, but it may have become tedious. It may become habitual. It may need to be revived and reinvigorated, right? And so we need to be able to see those signs when they're there. And they're usually not as obvious as just leaving the door open or as a bright red blinking sign. Usually it's somewhat more subtle, but we need to be able to, when we see them, act on them and have the courage to move forward.
My guest is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. Her latest book is Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. You're an ethnographer, meaning that you take people's personal experiences, they talk to you about them, and set them in a larger cultural context. So with regard to this conversation about exits, you look at the many ways in which the folk that you profile in the book have made an exit for themselves.
Right.
And so, you know, some through their voice. You have a chapter called Wounds, Yearning, Grace, as you've said before. I was taken with one of the people in the book who said, what is really profoundly important is what happens before the exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, because that will inform how your exit is shaped. And I wondered if you speak about that.
Well, I do think that that what propels us into exit is important, and that's what's happening before. That is, and that's partly what I was trying to say before when I say to begin to recognize the signs. Now, what's interesting about all of these exits, across all of these variety of ways in which we say goodbye, are two things that seem a little bit contradictory. One is that for all of these people, there is this moment, and it's sharp, it's clear, it's edgy, it's bold, when all the forces seem to come together and we say to ourselves or whoever will listen, I'm out of here. This is over. I'm done. And it doesn't necessarily have a negative cast, but it often does, right? And so that's a bold sign of exit, and we're declaring it. But also, people speak about the fact that despite the fact that there is this moment when we know it and announce it, that exits are generally very messy. They're iterative. They take a long time. There are lots of moments of circling back and retreat, right? So what's interesting is that way before we were able to even see and announce the fact that we are leaving, there were signs along the way, you know, moments
that we'd already
along
left.
The way that we don't, that we were about to leave,
okay,
right?
All right?
That were propelling us forward that we needed to notice. And even after we say we're out of here, and even after we do what's smart, which is create ritual and ceremony around our exit as we announce it, even after that, there will be reverberations later of questioning, of concern. Was this the right thing? Did I do it well? You know, did I hurt anyone in the process? What have I lost? That kind of questioning. So it's important to recognize that exits are clear, bold, but they're also messy and iterative. There's a lot of doubt. There's a lot of confusion.
Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Give us a call if you want to share a memorable exit in your life. Or how do you feel when people exit your life? I don't mean by death, but just move on.
Mm-hmm.
When relationships end, when you have quit a job or moved across the country. 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. So I wondered as I read this, and you were so careful to lay out the experiences of so many people in different ways as they sought to exit, what role exits played in your life?
Well, they played, like in all of our lives, a big role. One of the things which I talk about, I think, on the first page of the book is that I've always been fascinated not only with a big, earth-shaking, life-changing exits that we all face, but I've been always interested in the tiny little moments, the micro exits that I believe are very, learning how to do those well is important. And I remember when my kids were little, running to the window as they were leaving for school, watching them move off from home, exiting home every morning, seeing whether their backs were tall and straight, whether their spines were strong, whether they would be able to take on this day that was sure to be imperfect, because all of our days are imperfect. Would they have the strength and resilience and strong backs to do that? So I've always been interested in these little exits, and I've always paid a great deal of attention to them. I've also always been very ceremonial. I grew up in a family that toasted everything and sang about everything, and that just loved sort of the process of bringing art and ceremony and emotion to moments of importance, which were often moments of exiting. And then I've had my share of painful exits, deciding at a certain point that I could no longer go on in my marriage and I had to have a divorce, deciding that one of the schools that one of my children went to was not a place in which he could thrive, where he was being marginalized, where I felt as if he didn't have the kind of attention and nourishment from the faculty that he deserved. And at some point saying, we're out of here. And that was terribly painful to take that environment away from my kid who was fiercely loyal to this place. Mm. So there are these moments, mostly having to, even friendships that I've had to end because of great chronic disappointment over time in which my needs were not being fulfilled or it didn't feel as if there was a reciprocal kind of process going on. I think that these are painful, difficult decisions that we make. And again, we face them in this very kind of messy and iterative way. And then we finally make a decision. And then after we do them, there is this sense of liberation and freedom, but this inevitable chronic feeling as well of loss, mm-hmm. partly because of how our culture defines those exits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Defines them in a kind of way of thinking about them as failure or retreat.
As opposed to a benefit to you to go forward.
Right.
Cynthia from Rhode Island, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Hi, I'm so excited. I've never called in before, and I listen to your station all the time. And this was a subject that just touched me very personally. I'm in my 60s, and over 40 years ago, I had a best friend. Mm-hmm. We came from different socioeconomic backgrounds. She was relatively wealthy. I was not so middle. It was middle class. But we were very close friends. And we were in our 20s, and we did so many things together and shared so many things. And she became involved with someone, obviously, in her own economic background, and abruptly stopped our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
No longer kept in touch with me, did not return calls. And my family was kind of at a loss also. She had become very close to my mother, who was a wonderful person. And then one day, my mother said, she got married. It was in the paper.
Mm.
Never heard from her again. She never invited me to her wedding. And that, to me, was such an exit from my life that, believe it or not, 40 years ago, it still resonates.
Mm. Yes. Mm. Yeah, I think... Yes, and it resonates and it saddens you, and there are moments when I'm sure you experience something and it comes back like a flash, like it just happened yesterday. And that's an exit which is completely unresolved, right?
Mm.
Unarticulated, that there was no moment when this former friend of yours said to you very clearly that she was leaving and why she had to leave. She just disappeared. That's the kind of exit that often haunts us forever because there's no marker. There's no kind of clarity. And there's no opportunity for you to say, this makes me terribly sad. This causes me so much pain. Even if it's not going to change, we need to be able to declare our feelings about it. And so I think the disappearance of people, their sudden absence, is something that haunts us for a very long time.
It's like a forced exit.
Yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we still live in the same state. I actually know where she lives. And I've always hoped that someday I would run into her and be able to say, why did you do that? I think I know why you did that. But you think after everything we shared and been through, you could have said, I just don't feel that we're compatible anymore.
Well, Cynthia, as is clear in Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot's book, these leavings are messy. So they've been messy for 40 years. Maybe you take action now and make an exit out of it, even though she forced a different kind of exit onto you. Thank you so much for the call.
Sure.
That's a really painful one. That's, you know, I'm just pondering that. That's the whole friendship thing and the moving on from relationships, particularly when, you know, people don't die, and I don't mean that you want them to die, but when they're still around and you have to sort of manage that in your life, that's a big deal. Let me take Helen's call. Helen from Sterling, Massachusetts. Go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Hi, I have, again, not ever called in PR before, so here I am calling about this marvelous book. I had a very, what I found very useful thing said to me in regard to exits quite a few years ago, to never, ever, ever burn your bridges. And my question is the tendency to burn bridges. To exit a work situation or to just disappear, as the young lady with the friend who got married was talking about, whether that comes from putting too much emphasis on beginnings, a beginning is a clean slate, and therefore I can burn my bridges, especially when you're young, you don't realize it's really a small world. And that employer you're leaving or that friend you're leaving, you may want to show a little more grace about it, even if it's a very, very difficult situation that you're glad to be rid of.
I'm jumping in, Helen, because I want to give Sarah a chance to answer you because we're running out of time.
Yeah, I think that I think a lot of us, as a matter of fact, find it difficult to leave without making a scene. Right? Mm-hmm. In other words, that the only way we can leave is to get angry, to get mad, and to create a mess. It's very important, I think. I mean, partly it's just smart, not to leave a workplace, and in a fiery exit. But I also think it's important to be able to clearly talk about in a rational way. And that doesn't mean that anger isn't a good impetus, or that emotion isn't important, to reflect in your behavior. But I do think it's important to be able to say with a kind of a clarity and restraint what it is you're about as you leave, and to figure that out for yourself, and to be able to say that very clearly to whoever you're leaving, whether it's in relationship or whether it's a work environment, or whether it's really a shifting identity.
This isn't a how-to book, but, you know, I would gather from your book that embrace the ritual, think about these things, not understand that it's messy, and, you know, just work through it. That's what I gathered.
And notice it. Pay attention, right? Recognize that exits are as important as entrances, and sometimes much harder to do with grace.
All right. That's Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. And by the way, her book before Exits was the third chapter. So I guess you exit to the third chapter. That's what I think. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. I'm Callie Crossley. We've been talking about what we can learn from the exits that we make in life. I've been speaking with Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. She's a sociologist, a professor of education at Harvard, and her new book is Exit, The Endings That Can Set You Free. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Callie.
And thank you for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. The conversation continues 24 hours a day on our Facebook page. We'll be back tomorrow with our Week in Review and a conversation about jazz with Boston's jazz dean, Eric Jackson. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.